canine detection collaborative, a detection dog training trio with Stacey Barnett.
Hi.
Robin Grubel.
Hey there.
And Crystal Wing.
What's up?
With humor and a big dose of theory, our trio talks practical training advice and features interviews with top trainers and scientists.
It's Canine Detection Collaborative!
Welcome back to the Canine Detection Collaborative. I am here at the Home for Wayward Dog Trainers with, well, the homeowner, Robin Grubel.
Hello.
And my fellow wayward dog trainer, Stacey Barnett.
Hello.
And I'm Crystal Wing, and we are here with 10 and a half labs, 3.5 Dutchies, a Mal, Catahoula, an Aussie, and All-American. And then we also have the cheerleading squad of the English Shepherd and the mini Aussie with a grumpy old border collie to boot. So we have quite the fun going on here at the farm. So thank you, Robin, for letting us be here.
You're welcome. Thanks to my husband for being very tolerant of all of my crazy dog friends.
I know. And I'm like, I'm just going to park here for a while. So like, I'm going to just we're just like living on Robin's property right now. And then, we have Crystal's dad.
Dad came.
So cool. I love him.
Yeah. Making dinner yesterday, I was like, okay, how many people are we feeding?
I know, right?
We had to get 2 crock pots out.
Right.
That was a first. You're like, yeah, it's in the garage somewhere. We had to get a ladder to get it.
Yes.
I know. I'm like, I have an Instant Pot. It has a slow cooker function, and that was fun.
But here's the beauty of us being together. It is just a training extravaganza and really getting to see and experience the dutiful training and having this. I keep having these pinch me moments. Stacy's been teaching me vehicle searches the last few days, and we've been doing all these certification tests, and to have both of you as mentors and all of this odor work has just blown me away. Cause I think, okay, last summer, I feel like I really got a grasp on learning leash handling and line handling, taking what I know from protection sports and then transferring that from tracking and then transferring that towards the vehicles. And I was able to get more fluent with that skill, which I still need work. Okay. We all do. Not all, but I do.
Yes.
And then, what do you mean, yes?
We all do. We always, no, it's not you. We all need to work on it.
It's not me. It's you. I promise. No, but to have those skills and to be able to build on those skills and then to build on the scent theory that I'm learning from watching everybody and you guys teaching so much. And then to now have these amazingly brilliant setups that Stacey's been doing to really teach these vehicle and how odor moves. So I'm able to take the skills I'm learning about the scent theory and then problem solve what Stacey's been teaching me through these problems, which odor should be teaching exactly what we're always saying. And I'm so blessed to get to see how this works. Oh, it's so cool. And so now I can take all the skills and keep layering them. And now that I have Radish that's like, she's like, game on, let's go. It's really, I love seeing how this layers together instead of just lumping everything at once. There's no way we could be where we are right now without training together like we have been and really dedicating some time to each day working on each skill.
Well, and I remember last year, like at this time, a little bit later, we were actually having the conversation about Radish even continuing on in work.
I thought odor might be aversive to her.
Right.
And it was that questionable. We had to take a break.
Yeah. I mean, remember these conversations, like, and that was hard. Those were hard conversations, and they're disappointing conversations. And this year, oh my God, like I literally just saw you rock a very challenging search with the 5 vehicles and the 3 hides. And there was some crazy scent theory going on in there. And especially when I set a hide really way lighter than I
wasn't going to bust you on that one, but if you're going to do it, go with it.
Well, you know what?
When you don't normally play with cadaver dog odor and then we give you a hide that you actually have to take the lid off of.
Oh yeah.
It's okay.
But that doesn't sound like she can't take a lid off. No, but you got to take a lid off and then another lid and put another lid back on. It's more complicated than just take a lid off.
Right. We didn't remove the thing that kept odor in.
So in my defense, in my defense, I'm not the one that physically said it. I just pointed where it should go. Blame it on the intern.
Yeah, there you go.
We're going to blame that one on the intern. But the really cool stuff actually really happened because of it.
Right.
So,
yes, it was a good teachable moment for the dogs.
Yeah, I'm still blaming it on the intern, but okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. Love her, by the way.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Julia, she is. Oh my gosh.
Julia, I have two awesome interns this summer that are helping us out with all sorts of things, including stuff with cows and donkeys and chickens. And so they're, and plus they're getting ready to tee up for distraction camp and all sorts of things. And we could not do it without them. They're wonderful humans who make us laugh and
fabulous trainers,
old lady shenanigans that we do. And are just like, you guys are crazy.
Yeah. Roping bulls yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So that hide, it ended up really, really light. And because of that really kind of trace odor, he ended up with like this really disjointed kind of scent cone. And then we had some thermals, we had some vortex in there. It was really fascinating. And Radish just rocked it. And it was just so cool to see her work through and with you, like the two of you guys, just like work through like a really complicated search. And it was such a difference to go back to like what we were talking about, right? It was such a difference from last year when we had those conversations, like, you know, do you, don't you? And then to just like, I'm just like, wow, you guys.
It goes back to like one of our earlier episodes that we said, no training is better than bad training.
Yeah.
And that's really what I had to do with her. We had to take a break, and it just happened to be that that's when Quinn was dying. And so it just all kind of worked out, but it gave her some time to kind of grow up a little bit and kind of get her head on straight. And also for me to recognize that she is very different than any dog I've ever had. So she's a Mal and a Lab mixed together. Mm-hmm. She was an Oopsie. And the cool thing about her is she is middle of the road. She doesn't get super excited about things. Well, she'll scream and get real wound up. But I mean, in general, though, like in general life, she's just middle of the road in everything. She doesn't have amazing drive that she's going to like jump off a cliff because someone suggested it, like some of the other dogs would do.
Like with a twitch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Like I turn my shoulders to half degree, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
But she has enough to go, and she doesn't have the twitchiness of react, react, react. It's just middle of the road. And so it's really fascinating to learn how to work with her as opposed to my other dogs. And I think we both needed time to get to know each other more. Mm-hmm. And so we did more obedience type stuff and just relationship stuff. And it was, wow. I mean, well, she's 2.5. I mean, that's not, baby. That's not old. She's still, baby. She's young dog. And
I was just talking with one of my coaching clients about the fact that I was even looking at my timeline for training Flair or Flash. Right. And she's 7 months old, almost 7 months old. I have, if she makes it onto odor by the time she turns one, I'm okay. Yeah. We have so many foundation skills that I can put on her before I even expose her to odor so that when we get there, it's like, okay, this is, and she's having a hell of a lot of fun doing duck dog stuff at the moment.
She's so cute.
And she's just like, bring it on. So, which for me is all confidence building, joy of us working together, all of those sorts of things that when I can flip her onto odor, it's going to be really, really easy. And at least that's my theory. We'll see how that turns out. But that whole concept of push so hard, and then all of a sudden the dog's like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
I'm good. I mean, Ray, the English Shepherd that she mentioned, I certified her in cadaver work when she was 2. We certified in FEMA work at 3. At 5, she's like, I'm out.
Yeah.
And she was a house pet for 3 years, put her on narcotics work for a little bit. Now she's my full-time puppy raiser. She's 13 years old, and I am actually going through a small panic attack, realizing that she may not be around for my next puppy.
Yeah.
And she is such, I never thought she would do that, but she took over from Moses when Moses left
us. She's awesome. Watching her with Flash.
She's amazing.
She is.
And so that's currently her new job.
Yeah. She loves it.
She does. She's really good at it. And she gets to snark somebody occasionally. So that makes her happy.
And she gets the dishes as the paycheck. So she's loving it.
Right.
That's why she looks like a coffee table.
She had a bone this morning. I saw her out in the yard. She had a bone and Flash was like, "Hey, I like your bone." And I'm like, "Flash, I don't think that's such a good idea." He's like, "This is my bone." And Flash is like, "Okay."
You're right.
It was really kind of funny.
And she doesn't typically get over the top.
No, no. And she was just very clear, like, no, this really is my bone. This really is. And Flash is like, "Can I have it? Can I have it? Can I have it? Can I have it?" And then she's like, "Okay, I guess I can't have it."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I've been on the giving end of a lot of the conversations of, "Do you think that this is the right job for this particular dog?"
Yeah.
And people need to understand it doesn't devalue the dog. Because that's not the right job.
And it doesn't devalue the trainer either.
No.
Because that's what happened to me with Yukon, as we've talked about in the past, because he was not the right dog for the job, but I kept having everybody around me say he was the right dog for the job. And then it was all me.
Oh.
And then I was also telling myself that. So then, whoa.
Right. And then why can't I be a good enough trainer to make this dog do this thing? Yeah. And
you would always say, you're like, "You're working so hard. You're working so hard." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm working really hard." And I was feeling that with Radish too. And I'm like, "Yeah, it's easier than Yukon because she's smarter." But that's just a fact. But then
she's more consistent.
Well, no, she is smarter. I mean, okay. He goes around a pole on a leash and he can't figure out how to come back. Like she instantly figured out.
Well, actually, a lot of dogs, I think, can't figure that out.
At some point they do.
He's seven.
Well,
he's walked around a lot of poles.
You know, like he's so freaking sweet and cute and cuddly. And he's got that little ear that's like, "Ah." Oh,
and then he's, you know, just, what he lacks in brains, he has tons of personality. Oh, and I love him for that. So, but that break gave time for relationship to get to know each other. We could do lots of single problems and I could build my skills and I can now look at all of that and go, "We needed that. We needed that time. And I'm so thankful that I didn't push and that life got in the way, because I would have pushed her, I believe. And then we would not be where we are now, because there's no way I could get her out of the van and she'd want to go, go, go." And I mean, she did 3 2-acre area problems and then she got right back out and did a buried problem. And then she got right back out and did obedience. And she was like, "Yes, every time." I'm like, "You're not tired yet?" But that's also why I love that she's middle of the road, because she doesn't burn herself out. She doesn't overheat. She doesn't do anything at extreme. So I'm loving this a lot, you guys.
And you think about it a little bit, that a lot of the people who train dogs for other people don't even want to see the dogs until they're about 10 months old, because they want to be able to spin them up right into training. And for those of us who are owner, trainer, handlers, you get this puppy and it's this joyful little bundle of fluff that you're like, "I have so many hopes and dreams and all these things tied up in this one little 4-legged creature."
And add breeder for you. So that even more.
Well,
so.
And I, you send your puppies off out into the world with the people that you've hopefully hand selected to do very awesome things with your dog. And just realizing that, you know what, you're sending them off with hopefully a good human, that if nothing else, they are well taken care of and loved. And if they're a couch potato or a bump on a pickle, it's okay, because they're well taken care of and they're loved.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the maturity thing is really important. I mean, I'm looking at Powder right now and she just turned 4. With her and with Prize, actually, I pumped the brakes big time. I mean, I know they're still really young for what they're doing, for the levels that they're competing at, but that is including, like, I slow them down as much as possible where I just don't enter stuff at the time. And Powder, for the longest time, I was like, "Oh, this is just hard. Like, there's so much like arousal, right?" And it was just like, it was just hard. We were missing hides. And then it was almost like over the period of like a few months, she started to mature a little bit. And her scores just got better and better. And then this fall, oh my gosh, out of her final 4 elite trials, she was high in trial in 3 of them. And then went directly to her first summit trial and was high in trial. And it was like, And then this weekend, right, I took her out. We replaced all the HR hides with essential oil. So she did the 3 2-acre searches and she was spectacular.
I'm going to double down on that. Spectacular. That was so fun to watch.
It was fun watching the video since I couldn't be there and to see her like up on the bale, like a little goat.
Oh, I know. I know. She's like, I'm like, just please be careful getting.
Oh, and when we say bale, this is a big round hay bale. This isn't like a little.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know how high up it was, but she had to claw her way.
I was going to say, I think it's taller than me. I'm 5'8".
Yeah, it was high. It was high. I had my heart in my throat when she got down, but yeah. It was, yeah. Mm.
That's why you call her Patteroo, or I call her Patteroo. Every time she goes like Patteroo.
Kangaroo, she really is. But then we had that one hide that was elevated in the tree, the one that you had set with the HR crystal, right?
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
No, it was a great hide. It was an awesome hide. And then when water ran it, all that odor blew like into like, I'm talking like thick, thick tree.
Yeah.
Cover. And then like
ravine,
it was a slight ravine, you know, more like a gully, I guess. I don't know. It wasn't real deep, but wasn't dangerously deep. I'll put it that way.
No, but it was deep.
It was. Yeah. I mean, and then to see her like all down in there and working odor. And I know there was something dead there before, like in the area. And because we had a lot of
radish rolled on it.
Radish rolled on it. Right. So then she comes up and she knew it was elevated and she's working the different trees. And then it was all of a sudden it was like, and that was at the end of already finding another hide that was out in the middle of the sun and then the wind. I am just so floored by her. And she just like, I'm like an all-eyed dog. And she needed that maturity though.
The maturity factor is something that I think people underestimate. And let's be honest, I look at a lot of my working dogs.
Yeah.
And until they're about 2.5 to 3 years old.
Yeah.
They really don't have what I would consider the mental maturity to be, especially for the FEMA stuff, be fully operational.
Okay. But here's the thing. You see these puppies, and I'm going to say, especially the girls, it seems, and I don't know, it's just something I'm noticing, uh-huh. but they seem so mature. And then with puppies, they learn so much so fast.
Yes.
And that's so addictive. And I think that's why I love having puppies now. Because it's just every single session is so much fun and so much growth.
Yes.
And I think that's where the work ethic comes in, where it's so much fun to raise them. And then once you start getting to that point where it becomes work and it's just, you have to keep adding stamina and nose time and you have to start adding duration and you have to start adding the 4 Ds, you know, that's when.
It's the drudgery of training, but you have
to be.
That's
the fifth D.
That's a drudgery.
No, that's a seventh.
I think we might be up to 8. But
because we had, don't forget discrimination.
Yeah. Then let's talk about the whole fact of being a dutiful, which is now like number 10, trainer. Thanks, Jens.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's just the grind. And what we were doing something the other day, we were very proud of ourselves and being like, Jens would think we were fantastic because we were out here training.
In the rain. We set every morning. And that's what's been so great. Every morning we get up, we all potty our dogs, we all work our dogs. And we may not get to all of them because like we said, there's 10 and a half labs, a Mal, 3.5 Dutchies. Like that, it's a lot of dogs. And then you have the different, even just the different things we're training between the duck dog and then competition healing. And odor and we're doing certification type setups and problems and they take a lot of time. So it's a lot, but still every day we're doing it and it was in the rain and we're like, we're not changing our plans. We're listening to the ends and we're doing it. And he was really inspirational.
I was here post-rain. Of course, I had plenty of rain at home.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was horrible.
Thanks for bringing some rain.
Yeah, actually that was nice. And seeing all of the progress that all of the dogs are making when we are doing that very purposeful, the amount of time we're actually working dogs and then the amount of time that we're planning and setting up and talking through how we're working dogs, equal amounts.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in like bliss for the last.
I've been Stacy's dog quite a bit lately.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. She's helping with healing. I feel Crystal quite a bit.
I'm like, okay, now pivot. It's like a bad Friends episode. Pivot.
And I kept messing it up. And then I'm like,
oh, you're doing beautifully.
Well, we got the pivot right. But then I had to back up and I was backing up the wrong direction.
But I love how we all give and take equally. And it's really been a great thing. And then with the interns here, they are just, they're wonderful. They're just sponges. They're sponges. And it's so cool. Woof. I'm thinking back about the whole work ethic piece. I do believe because I've been able to layer in my training and my learning, it's been better in the times that I wasn't quite up for training. And I went for a spell, like after Quinn died, I didn't train hardly at all. I was just training others and I was just still watching and reviewing and giving feedback. I'm thankful I didn't because I wasn't ready mentally. And I do believe in that it's better to not train if you're going to have crappy training and wait until you can be thoughtful and you can have plans because you are just kind of spinning your wheels and it wouldn't have been a good place. And I'm glad that I did take that break, but I also am seeing too, and I've always felt this with tracking. If I can have 3 or 4 days of consistency, that's better than a day here and a day there. So I don't know. It's something I've just really felt in my own training.
Well, then you have the checkmate situation, right? Because he wasn't really physically up for it. And now he has had this hip replacement and he looks awesome.
He's looking so good. And I figure all my time was conditioning and I don't want to train anymore because I'm just spending all my time walking and conditioning and running and all of the strength training. And it's just like, what's even the point?
Yeah. You had that. And then you had, you know, with Quinn and everything and then trying to the stuff with, and now it's like, oh my gosh, Radish is like hitting it out of the park. Checkmate looks awesome. Yukon's cuddly, you know?
Well, and really just getting that chance to go to California too with Denise, like she really lit my fire again too about getting Checkmate back out and teaching him some new stuff. And I think too, you know, Stacey, I was thinking about, you know, our little chat last night and kind of today at lunch or picnic table. I don't know. we didn't have food. Just finding those goals and finding those things that are interesting to us that we think that might be something to pursue to give us those little side passions.
Yeah. To help us grow, right?
Yeah. And to help our dogs grow. Like, what is our dog good at? What would they enjoy? And what would we enjoy? Because we can't force ourselves to do stuff we don't enjoy. And I think that's where the washout thing came from of, when I had to decide to wash out Yukon and say that, nope, you can't do this anymore. We're not going to put more time in and it's just not working. And with Checkmate, I did the same thing a year ago. It's like, nope, you're retired too. And now that he's healthy, you know, he can do stuff. So we're back. It's tricky.
And the value judgment that you then, the internal pressure you're putting on yourself or your team or your training partners. And I have students that I work with that I tell people a lot, I invest in people. The dogs are a counterpart to the person, but some of the people that I invest in, I absolutely know that they can't get another dog right now. Whatever's going on in their life, they can't have another dog. They might have a fabulous pet or low drive, low arousal dog or whatever. But oh boy, the training skills that we can work on, it's kind of like having, I call them starter dogs. And it's kind of like a starter home where you can learn some really amazing skills and really amazing concepts and all of those things so that when you're able to go out and get the Ferrari, you actually know how to drive it and you might not crash as bad.
Well, you might not crash as bad, but the Ferrari is still going to be tough to drive.
Exactly.
I'm going to tell you I've never actually driven an actual Ferrari, but
right.
That's a whole topic for another podcast where the Ferrari, it may look easy. No.
And they're not.
I think the thrill seeking side of me, my first car was a 1980 Trans Am. And so the thrill seeking side of me. And then my first dog was a Quinn. And so he was a Ferrari. And so when I don't have a Ferrari on board, I'm like, bored. And not bored, but just like,
I love it. But it's just like, oh, wow. This is sometimes really hard.
Yeah. That's a thrill seeking side, man. Oof. Let's go. Let's go. But again, high drive.
Yeah. High drive. And we'll do another episode about that one. So
we are just completely scattered. Rope us in, Robin, rope us in.
Okay, come with me, girls. I think because when we started talking about the purpose of this particular episode, we were kind of all going through our own dogs. And Dash is a repurposed disaster dog. He's now doing bomb dog work. That was a hard decision. His entire purpose of me getting him was to be a disaster dog. And he looked at me and said, yeah, I don't want to do that. And so I basically said, okay, I have a really cool, pretty pet for about a year and a half until I found the bomb dog work. And now he's like, yeah, I got it. We're good. And so I think people may, this is one of the times where I want to look at a lot of people and say, what's your why? Why are you doing this stuff with this dog? If you want, and if your why is you want to do cool stuff with your dog, start thinking outside the box on the cool stuff that you can do with your dog.
Yes. And it's, my brain's going in 12 different directions as usual.
I was wondering which way you were going.
I know. I'm like, I could go in two directions right now. So the one direction is that I have dogs that I want to keep training for additional things. That's the other thing, you know, we were doing all this other training and I'm like, I'm enjoying the healing. I'm enjoying that, you know, we're teaching the girls how to climb ladders and stuff like that.
I'm sorry you said you were enjoying healing.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
That's weird.
I know it is. But it,
Robin, not weird.
It's weird.
Not weird.
Not weird. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But Crystal's helping me. That makes it fun.
It is fun. If it's not fun, you're doing it wrong.
Right. So it was fun. And I found out that I don't fall over backwards when I back up, which is really great. So that's one side of it where
you're smooth.
Thank you. So trying to and I'm realizing, you know, I want to do more with my dogs. So it was just really fun to just like start to grow. So that's one part of it. You have a dog and you're like, this dog's doing really, you want to grow into, just want to grow. So there's one half of it. The other half of it is when you have a dog that you kind of halfway says yes, and you just kind of give him a break. And then kind of what we were talking with Radish, but I'm looking at like, why? You know, here I had this little dude that I'm like, well, he really kind of couldn't do anything else. He's just so environmentally sensitive. And nose work tends to be a little bit of a catch-all sport because it's kind of like, because it's
very friendly.
It's therapeutic. I think that's what it is that there it's so applicable to so many different types of dogs. You can use it from like more of a therapeutic, like just to develop the confidence of the dog and to bring that inner dog out, that it's beautiful for that. But it's also, if you want to get highly competitive and you want to do some really cool, like it is freaking fun.
Shoot. I had somebody posting in my group that they were searching the Queen Mary. I'm like, how fun is that?
Oh yeah. I literally wanted to do that, but it was on the wrong coast.
Right.
But I've also, I mean, I searched the inside of a 737. That is like
something. Yeah. I haven't even done that.
In competition, right? It was a repurposed FedEx plane. It was really cool. I found out hiding in that cockpit. I mean, stuff that like is just fun, but it's also super competitive. So like at certain levels, especially like a summit level, I mean, it is extremely competitive. So there's just this broad spectrum, right? And I think that's why, like from a sport perspective, it really is a little bit of a catch-all. So I really couldn't do a lot of the other sports, partially because of his, because of health issues, right? Partially because he was so sensitive. And then, so I started nose work because it was like, I can't really figure out what else you want to do. And especially after Judd died, I think it was just like this tailspin and he just completely opted out. Like he was just like, no.
And you let him.
I did.
That was the nice thing.
Oh, I totally did.
You're like, okay, buddy, vacation.
Yeah. But it was a 2-year vacation.
Well, and then you also got a puppy.
Yeah. The puppy. So Powder was a puppy when he started to opt out. Cause that was also, I got Powder at the same time that Judd got sick. It was bad timing. It just happened that way. And then when I got Prize cause that Powder and Prize are very close together. So when I got Prize, all of a sudden he's like, oh, I like this one. And Prize kind of, cause he's like Powder and I'm not so sure about her, but I like this one. And he and Prize is great with it. They love each other. So that helped, I think, to bring him out of his shell a little bit. And it basically, I would take him in the van and I'd be like doing searches with the other dogs. I'm like, I said a search. Why do you want to do a hide? And he'd come out and be like, no, not really. And he'd come out again. No, not really. And then he'd come out. It's like, oh, I want to do a hide. He'd find a hide. I'm like, would you like to find another one? No, not really. And when he said, no, not really, I just let him. And then finally, it was just all of a sudden, he's like, yeah, I want to do this now. And now he's halfway to elite champions. So.
And I value and just allowing, it's the whole process of sometimes asking the question with the dog. Do you want a choice? Do you want to play this game? And not understanding that, yes, you have reinforcement in place and you have all of these other things in place. And you can do that. And that's the one thing that I really love about sport. And I know Ray, if I had time, she'd really like to be, and Jinx, oh my God, Jinx would love to be doing barn hunt.
Uh-huh.
And probably physically, he can't do the detection dog stuff. He'd love to do nose work and all of those things. Yeah, do time.
Yep.
But even Ray, when I was like, do you want to do search work? She's like, no, I just want to follow you around. And I'm like, okay. And I would love to do sport with them that you have the option of opting out.
Yeah. But that is sport though, right?
Right. And with the working dog stuff, I have to have the consistency.
Yeah, you do. Because honestly, because you've got something on the line there that is bigger than...
Which is a lot of pressure. So we won't go there too hard.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is like, but that's the nice thing about this, about sport, is that if the dog opts out in the middle of a search, you can go, cool,
we're done.
Yep. That's fine.
And it's okay.
Yeah. I can leave that entry on the table.
And I've
done it.
Yeah. And I've seen people who we have the discussion that the dogs in the working dog side of the world, that the dog's consistently inconsistent. And that's hard, because then it, is it a motivation issue? Is it the right job issue? Is it a trainer issue? Is it becomes all of issues, challenges, whatever. It becomes this whole thing. And you have to start asking yourself and the dog, is this what you want to do?
I think the other thing I'm kind of hearing too, I think about Prize and I think about Obi and Brava.
Obi's one of the other labs.
Julia's dog.
Yo, we haven't talked it. This is Julia's dog. We haven't talked about the intern's dogs yet. So the Obi is one of the intern's dogs. He's a lab. He's large.
Imagine this really large, beautiful, just buff yellow lab.
He's honky.
He's a hunk. And he's a conservation dog. And she's realizing it too. And Stacy, you know, same. It's like, these dogs are so amazing at what they do, but it's not enough.
Yeah.
And it's hard because they are so driven and they want more, and we want to keep giving them more. And I think too, when Ramid was talking about the pressure, I think too, the pressure we put on like our cadaver dogs, I was putting a lot of pressure on Radish, then I had to step back completely. And now she's all for it. She's game on. But it's the balance we create by providing the more. I don't know that it's not the best for us to just stick with just the one thing, because they need that release, whether it's a great hiking buddy or other sports or other activity. I mean, just taking Radish for the big runs.
Something that they don't have to be perfect in too, though.
Yeah. But something we can take the pressure off of ourselves, the pressure off of them.
That's agility for me. Like if Brava's not perfect, I'm like, well, I guess I need to train more. Or if I'm like, ah, that was handler. It's just like, I've got this sport where I just like, I'm like, I can have fun in that. I don't feel like there's, because I mean, I do nose work for a living, right? So there is pressure. And this is my job. This is my career. And so when I go and I go out and compete, I feel it. And when I go and I do agility, that's fun. I'm just like, okay, we didn't make our weave entry. I guess we need to train that a little bit more. No big deal. And I think it's fun for her too. She doesn't, it's just... So I think having those other things is important.
Well, and we did a whole episode on cross training. What else are we training our dogs to do, right?
We're all over the place.
And one of the things there's a lot of stuff that you do in detection dog work that's super fantastic and keeping your dogs honed up on their skills. But I also think about, I'm doing the duck dog stuff with the narcotics and explosives dogs and Flash.
Yeah.
And poor Nico, it's become very apparent to me he needs other stuff. Just getting him out to go do odor work,
I agree,
is great.
Yeah.
But it's not expanding the brain cells.
Yes.
And all of the other stuff. And we do directionals, we do a beat, enough bead beating to be able to somewhat function. And so I might actually have to suck it up a little bit and actually do some of the obedience training that he really needs to provide clarity in what jobs he always has to have.
Yep.
Because otherwise he invents his own and I hate them.
Yep.
And someone used the word self-employ.
Yes.
And I love that word so much.
I think that was you.
No, someone else.
Oh, okay. The last time I heard it was you. It was you. Okay. Yeah. I just been hearing it from Crystal.
Was it? I thought maybe it was Jane Arden. I don't know. I heard it somewhat recently and I was like, I love that concept because if we're not constantly giving them a job, they will self-employ. And I'm pretty sure I'm not going to like what they choose for an employment.
Yes.
And so even like Stacey and I were working with Brava and she can be a little vocal. And so it was
a little,
okay. I was being generous. and so, but it comes to the work ethic thing too. Of like, you have to be so dutiful in what it is that the dog's doing or not doing that you want to work on. And it all circles back to that because we are putting a lot of pressure on them. And so then they're putting pressure back on us to like, look, I need a job at all times because they're working dogs. I mean, that's,
yeah.
So
I used her to kind of demo a couple concepts and I was talking to Jenny, right? And Brava was like, hey, I'm here. So when I was actually working her and doing the concept, she was just like, okay, game on, boom, 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 boom. But then when I was trying to describe it, she was self-employing. Or so. Yeah, I know all about being self-employed. It's hard.
And that's where the accountability buddies come in because then I'm sitting over there on the side going, Stacey, give her a job. Stacey, give her a job.
I know. And I'm like, sit. And she's like, I mean, like, that's just not enough of a job for her. She's like, that's not enough. So yeah. That's a work in progress. Thankfully, I have Crystal to coach me through it. So
yay.
And one of the other things that I can see people do sometimes is the floundering that goes on if your dog is inconsistent or is not giving you the behaviors that they're expecting. They start switching progression plans or they start switching and trying all of these different things to find out what's going to theoretically make the dog work.
Oh, yeah. Mixing methods
or...
I had a conversation with someone recently on that one, mixing methods.
Right. One of the big things that I've really started to realize is people are making things too lumpy.
Yeah.
So the dog really, not only are you mixing methods, but then they really have no idea what they're supposed to be doing. Plus, the whole concept of reinforcement and what you're paying the dog may not actually be what the dog likes. And so...
Not the method, it's the application.
Right.
So you're saying that timing, criteria, and rate of reinforcement are important?
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
What? Amazing how that works, isn't it? I think we've talked about that just a little bit. And the whole concept of actually reinforcement?
Yes.
And breaking that and
what are you reinforcing?
Yeah. What behavior are you actually reinforcing?
And how are you using the reinforcement to get you right back into the activity?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And all of these little things kind of wrapped up into, because I know Crystal, we spent a lot of time last fall talking about what to do with Radish.
Yeah. Take a break.
Yeah.
We never really said that, but that's what it ended up being. That was the ticket.
Right. The ticket. And, you know, that's what happened with Y. Ray did the same thing. Ray didn't get employed back in search and rescue work because you know what? When your reinforcer is a human, I mean, her entire purpose for existing is I don't want to be more than 6 feet from you. Okay.
Yeah. No, that's going to be kind of hard.
That's kind of hard. Well, we could do it, but I don't want to walk that much. And so I just think about the whole thing of make sure that you are cutting everything as thinly as you need. Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid to take that month off.
And I do want to say, when I say I took a break, it doesn't mean that we did nothing.
Right.
No.
You did other. Yeah.
So that was, we worked on our recalls. We worked on our remote stops. We worked on.
Yeah. It's not, you didn't put her in a box and leave her alone. No. Yeah. No.
So I will kind of go there and say, the things that I think are all those crucial things. It's the collar give. That's number one.
It just means that that pie, like if you think about your dog's time and you split it up and like I'm picturing like a pie chart, right? Your pie chart changed.
Yeah.
That's all it was. It was like, instead of the slice of doing this, that time got filled with doing other stuff.
But I still kept concept training in. So things that would still help me. So I worked on really fast sits because my trained funnel response is a sit. So I worked in high arousal, teaching sits and downs and stimulus control between the two. So can I do like a fast miss the tug, sit? Can you throw that sit really fast? And then can I mark that behavior? And then we can go back into a fast game of missing the tugs and then plots. And then will you shoot down or will you sit? And so can I create different pictures and different distances and add in every kind of scenario I can to the behaviors I'm going to need for my odor work, but not have any odor in it? And can I have a collar give from 100 yards out where it's just collar, my hand goes out and she comes running in and slams her hand in my, her collar into my hand, even if she's not wearing one. Can I have the things that I'm going to need searching?
Which turns out to be a safety issue.
Yeah. Can I get my remote stop?
Right. I mean, it's a recall. Yeah.
So it's all the things I know I'm going to need, and I can work on all the foundations for all of those and make that more of the priority, which I now kind of think that that's where I'm going to go from now on in the future anyway. I think I want to do a real strong introduction of some odor foundations and then just go really heavy into all of the behavior stuff that I need, you know, all of the
needed skill sets.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And just, and put odor and put all that on hold because they need to grow up.
And I hear that and we talk about it. Just let them grow up. Just let them grow up. But you're absolutely right, Stacey. That's not throw them in a box.
No.
Or a kennel and just ignore them for the next 6 months.
No. You develop them.
Right. And this is Flash. I've looked at her and said, okay, I know you can hunt because I see you do it all of the time.
Uh-huh.
I know you can retrieve birds. We really suck at healing at the moment.
Well, she's a floppy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, puppies are floppy. I mean, they just are physically floppy. It's really, it's hard to, and they go, whoa, butterfly. I mean, that's what they do.
And so I was like, we'll just work on learning to be a civilized creature.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a little while on top of everything else.
Yeah.
And it's perfectly okay.
She's also really cute and smushable. You just want to like kiss her and squeeze her. She's adorable.
Not quite Collar George, but.
Cute.
But we forget all of that stuff because everybody seems to be really always focused on odor work. How fast can we get the dog up, deployable, and out the door? And I'm like, I want a reliable dog out the door.
I mean, I look at my dogs and I was just like, so for instance, like the elite trials, right? You only get so many points in elite and then you're done. And so what I was telling with what I do is, I mean, my dogs end up at elite, at least my young ones, right? They end up, they're young. I mean, Prize got her into B3 elite. Gosh, it was a week after her second birthday. And they're only allowed to start trialing at 1 year old. So she literally just, and she just, if she entered, she passed. So then I'm like, you're not ready for elite. No. I mean, I literally waited like 6 months before I entered her in elite trial. And I tell people I enter that first trial as an information gathering session. And that's all it is. It's just, I want to see where you are. It is a test. I am literally testing to see.
You're testing. Yeah. What holes do I have in my training?
Where are you? Because I train you all the time, but now I want to see what the test result is. And then I waited another 6 months for her second elite trial. And I'm like, okay, now you have your elite one. I've got another data point. These are some other things because I see so much potential in this dog that I don't want to burn through all the points. I want that dog to be like, you know, how Powder killed it at the end of elite where, you know, she was high on trial in 3 out of 4 of her final trial. And the last 2 trials, she found every single hide and one of them was 100 points. That is insane.
And she was what?
That's what I want.
3?
Yeah, I was right before she turned 4 years old.
Right. So, and this is one of those things that I really think by pushing dogs a lot, we do them a huge disservice. And I understand from the professional side, some places where they're like, oh my gosh, it's a cost benefit ratio thing.
Yeah.
But I also think that there needs to be some understanding that one, leaving a dog reside in a kennel and not teaching it anything until it's 10 months old.
That's not helpful. That's going to hurt the dog. That just hurts the dog.
Is actually detrimental to the whole training process.
Yeah. The more time they spend doing that, the more time they're just going to be really hard to train.
Exactly. And you leave a lot of dog on the table. And then you jam a dog through a 3-month training process and jam a handler through a 2-week training school, which is actually what happens in a lot of the working dog world. If you're lucky, it's 2 weeks.
I'm kind of like, I'm just sitting here listening to this and I hate to say it, I'm like horrified by those numbers.
And then they go out to work. And you're talking about dogs who are anywhere from 12 months to 2 years old. And I just am like,
Can you see me? I'm not breathing. I'm like kind of speechless right now.
Yeah. Some really young dogs out on the street, which I get the cost benefit stuff with really young handlers. And it makes things really hard.
Hard. That's got to be really hard. I mean, the thing is, I look at my students and the time it takes for people to learn how to read their dog.
Yeah.
It's huge. It's huge. And it's one of these things because otherwise you're really just relying on the dog's train final.
Right.
At that point. And if they, you know, in my case, I don't necessarily teach my students to use one depending on the dog. Sometimes I think sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And I just look at I'm always trying to slow my students down, but the result is beautiful. Like it's just so beautiful. Those timeframes are just kind of blowing my brain right now.
It is the nature of the beast in which we live.
Yeah. And it's kind of what you have to do. I'm just sitting here, like the amount of learning and knowledge that you get that amount of time is just not a lot.
And bless our police officers. They all have to be police officers first and their canine second.
Yeah. Wow.
And so they have all of the rest of the stuff that they have to learn to do on top of it. And
that's got to be hard, very hard.
And staying alive.
It's incredibly difficult. And staying alive, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah, that too.
So yeah, they get to go home every night.
Yeah, and have their stuff like hold up in court.
Right. It's crazy nuts.
I have a hard enough time keeping training logs and this is all I have to do.
I know. I'm like, oh my gosh, training logs. Yeah, let's not even talk about training logs. So I think that we've been all over the planet with this particular episode.
Yes.
But I think that the whole concept of right dog for the right job.
Yes.
If it's not the right dog, well, it is the right dog. It might not be the right job.
Yeah.
Is probably one of the best ways that I can think for people to.
And that it's okay.
It's okay. And if you want to do a very specific job, you need to be prepared to let dogs go, which is one of the hard things that I have. I don't do that well. And so the other side of that is that's a lot of self-reflection on the human part to be able to look at a dog and say, this dog is not performing at the level that I want it to perform. So we're going to either find a new thing to go do, or I'm going to retire the dog. I'm going to give the dog a break. I'm going to do all of these things.
Yep.
And that involves letting go of a whole bunch of hopes, dreams, wishes, everything else that you might have wanted with that dog.
There's a lot of disappointment there that you have to deal with, and you have to realize that it's disappointment on your side. It has nothing to do with the quality of the dog or the quality of the trainer.
Correct. And it's hard. So
I'm hearing it's about our work ethic, our dog's work ethic, the need for downtime for us and our dogs.
Yes.
We can't be negligent on that we do need rest and they need rest as well. And also the need for options, that a lot of our dogs, they need more than maybe the one thing we have planned for them or maybe the one passion we have. And so it might be good for us to be able to know other options and start kind of exploring those for our dogs.
Yeah.
Because I'm really curious about getting more into the RH program with ARSA, like with we introduced Melissa not too long ago. So those are more things kind of on my kind of like radar going on.
Yep. So we've been talking a lot about dogs getting into new things. And we also talked a lot about actually Radish's really cool vehicle search. I do want to mention I've got classes starting August 1st. And I really love my approach to introducing nose work and how I do focus a lot on building those core scores, core skills, and kind of bringing all that together. So introduction to nose work actually opens for registration and it will be class starts August 1st. I'm also teaching a class on vehicles and exteriors. So that some of those types of setups, we're going to talk about that. And I have a setup class for greener dogs. So hope you guys can join me at FenzieDogSportAcademy.com.
Check the show notes. Yep. On the show notes, we'll have a link so you can go register for Stacy's classes. Make sure you like camp out on your computer because all the gold spots will go really, really fast.
And I love how we're kind of closing with this because it takes us back to the beginning where I kind of mentioned about Radish's vehicle stuff, but really I was kind of wanting to mention too that it's more important to learn from the best in the beginning if possible, because you're not going to waste your time then. So thank you, Stacy, for teaching me because I'm truly getting to learn from the best.
Yeah. Thanks everybody for taking some time for us to like just chat.
Yeah, that a very missed kind of.
Yeah, it was one of those conversations. So
multi-directional conversation.
Actually, welcome to joining us around the dinner table.
Yes,
we're talking here at the foundation and on the farm. So this is pretty much what that all looks like. So thanks everybody. We look forward to speaking with you next week and go train.
Canine Detection Collaborative.
We appreciate the time you spend with us. If you liked this episode, not only should you follow us so you don't miss the next one, but please also rate and review us in your favorite podcast app. For info on collaborating with us, go to caninedetectioncollaborative.com. That's K9detectioncollaborative.com, where you can find our socials and pick up our latest monthly freebie. Join us again to talk training in the next episode.